From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made over the course of 61 pages and 84 recommendations. It's a report about the Rochester City School District, long expected, compiled by a state-appointed educational consultant named Jaime Aquino. It alleges that too often in Rochester, decisions are made with adults in mind first, not kids, not students. The report cited poor communication. It raised concerns that at times the school board is too involved, essentially forcing superintendents to leave after only a short time on the job. And right now, the Rochester City School District is in search of another leader at the top. The list has been long in the last decade there. This hour, we want to have a conversation about the report, the alleged problems, the search for new leadership, possible solutions, and more. So let me welcome our guests in studio with us. Van White is the president of the Rochester City School Board. Van, welcome back to the program.
Good morning, Evan. How you doing?
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
It's already,
Right.
Good morning, good afternoon.
It's been quite a day already.
Nice to see you here. Natalie Shepherd is a Rochester City School Board commissioner. Ms. Shepherd, welcome to the program. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
And Justin Murphy is an education reporter for the Democrat and Chronicle, who's done such outstanding work on these related issues this year especially. Nice to have you back here. Thanks for being here, Justin.
Hi, Evan.
So let's just kind of start with the broad view. And Justin, having covered this more than I have directly, I mean, you cannot sum up 61 pages in a paragraph, but I think that the standout headline to me was the allegation that too often it's adults in mind with decisions in the RCSD, not kids first. Is that fair? Or what's the standout headline to you?
I think that's fair. And I think, you know, the Aquino report covers enough ground as it is, but really the greater context of the district now is a bunch of other reports, surveys, processes going on. And I think that the overall process is something that the outgoing superintendent identified but wasn't really able to get her hands around, is the way that the systems don't work together. And that's kind of where you get into having people focus on adults first, because maybe in some systemic sense that's a default, but the systems are addressed sometimes, Jaime Aquino writes, to make adults' lives easier rather than children's, and there's a I think he would say a major lack of communication at all levels, parents to school administration, teachers to children, teachers to parents, schools to central office to school board, you know, every kind of communication you can think of is broken, is what he found. And that obviously gets you a long way toward any other problems that you find downstream.
All right, so let me ask the commissioners in the studio. Natalie Shepherd, did you find yourself reading that report and saying most of it, all of it was fair, most of it, all of it was unfair? What did you think?
For me, I kind of think that we talk about, and just the point that you made, we talk about us focusing more on adults than the students. And I want to caution people of thinking that it has to be a first and then, and that we should be attacking all of those areas at one time. And so for me, when I was looking at the report, you know, I thought it was a fair report. I don't think that it was anything that we haven't been seeing year after year. One of the key things, though, is that I've been asking the administration as we go through the recommendations is, why are many of the recommendations even on here or highlighted as an issue if we already have policies and procedures that are in place? So where is the breakdown and where do we need to fill those gaps? And so that has been my point I would say attacking when we're breaking down this report.
All right. So in other words, you've known about these problems. The report doesn't raise anything that you say, wow, I had no idea. So you've known about these issues. You've had policies meant to address them, but it's still not working. And so what you want to find out is, why is that?
Yes, that's correct. And, you know, I ran on a lot of the issues as well. Yeah. And I know that I've inherited, a lot of the things that are broken within our educational system. And so now that I'm on the inside, I do have that authority where I can request certain things and get certain information so I can really start to see, as some people might want to call it, being in the weeds as a board member, but really understanding where are we at? What is the reality of our situation so we can move forward?
Okay. President White, what did you make of the report, broadly speaking?
Broadly speaking, I thought it, again, there weren't a lot of surprises.
Yep.
Much of what he has written has been written by others. There's been reports that have been commissioned. For example, the Council of Great City Schools did a report on special education under Superintendent Vargas. That was followed by a report on special education that was commissioned by Barbara Dean Williams, done by Dr. Judith Elliott, I believe. All of them reaching the same conclusions. And I think what Dr. Kino did was just elaborate on those. I think, though, in my estimation, my humble opinion, there wasn't recognition of the things that had followed. For example, again, there was the Council of Great Cities report on special education, followed by Dr. Elliott's report on special education. But we just did something unprecedented. We took a board member who had extensive experience in the area of special education as a parent and as a practitioner, Melanie Funches. And she did something, along with a bunch of folks in the community, that was really unprecedented and developed a consent agreement. And I don't think there was enough acknowledgement about the sort of unprecedented nature of that work. And the reason why I believe it's important to acknowledge that is I believe, just personally myself, that the way we address these problems is not through Dr. Aquino, is not through Barbara Dean Williams, but by a community of people, including the board, not through the mayor, but through a community of people. I believe that approach works the best. And I don't think there was enough reference to systems that are in place that do service adults and service them well. Melanie Funches' special advisory group is an example of that. Another example of that is what the folks have done at East High School as a community-based activity. Very little reference to the tremendous success, progress that is being made at East High School. So I wondered why there wasn't more reference to, while I find that there was legitimate things that said about things that we weren't doing well, I think what was conspicuously missing from the report is evidence of adults working successfully on behalf of children. I don't deny that this district has struggled in a number of areas, ELLs, special needs students, attendance, you name it. We've struggled with those problems. But I think what drew into question, what caught my attention was the complete absence of things that are working. Let me just give you one example for the benefit of children. The state knew when it issued this report, nine of our receivership schools had made what they call demonstrable improvement. That doesn't appear in the report. Now, Justin and the rest of the community is going to find out by January of this year that some other very significant progress points have been made. None of that stuff, nothing that is positive in this district, really. He highlighted some stuff in a general way. But the positive things that adults were doing for children, all that stuff was missing. And I'm not saying that so people can say, oh, look what a great job the board did or anything like that. Like Natalie, I got on this board, as you know, when the graduation rate was even worse than it is now. Only 39% of the kids graduated on time. But we are now at 59%. And the acknowledgement that adults are doing some things right for our children is critical to supporting the adults that want to continue to do that work.
Okay. Anything you agree or you want to take issue with any of that, Natalie?
So I'll just say, you know, I don't necessarily take issue with it, but I do want to be very clear that Dr. Aquino did not get assigned to our district to come in and tell us of all the positive things that we have going on. I think that that's a responsibility of our community, specifically our board, our media here, for us to highlight those things. But it would have been, I feel, a misallocation of money for him to come in and just tell us all the positive things that we're doing. So I actually appreciate his approach and the things that he was able to talk about. I do want to say, though, that with our graduation rates, and I've brought this up many, many times, is that no matter where that number goes, if the percentage does not align with our kids being career and college ready, that just simply means that we're walking kids across the stage to get a piece of paper. And so I know that at one point, we only had 6% kids career and college ready out of however many total that walked across the stage. Like, that's an issue for me. And so when we're talking about graduation, I want to talk about what it is that we are doing in our district, pre-K through 12, that's going to get our kids and students ready for the next level.
Okay. So I know Van's going to have something to say on that, and our listeners are going to have things to say this hour. If you want to call the program, you can do that. It's 844-295-TALK. It's 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Let me ask the education reporter in the room. I think what Natalie and Van raise as these ideas that this report compiles in one place a lot of what some folks, at least many folks, already knew. I think that's fair. And so some listeners might be wondering, well, then so what? Well, what does the state, having authorized this report, what does the state have the power to do as a result of it? What can Mary Ellen Elia do as commissioner? What is possible as a result of this report that might not be possible otherwise?
Yeah, that's a good point, because the difference, it's true that there's nothing in this report that you haven't been able to hear on the radio, read in the newspaper before. The difference is the heft behind it. And in terms of what actions she could take, that's sort of uncharted territory, I think, in terms of the levers available to her. Unfortunately, Rochester has kind of historically been a leader in terms of testing out what kind of sanctions you can draw from New York State. You know, there's a continuum of intervention that I suppose theoretically could go all the way to a Detroit-style takeover of the board. I don't think that that's necessarily what anybody has in mind, not least of all because I'm not sure that Commissioner Elia would look at the district and feel like that's something that she really wants on her personal legacy is whether or not her appointee was able to turn things around. But Jaime Aquino is different from, you know, for instance, Judy Elliott, who Van mentioned earlier. She wrote a very comprehensive, thorough special ed report with a lot of data. And it was shocking to read, but then, you know, at the end of the day, you either implement the recommendations or you don't, and then you have other stuff come up, and, you know, that's how the nature of reports is. Dr. Aquino is remaining in Rochester. I know that he meets with these people all the time, the board and the district, and that's his job to say to Commissioner Elia, if, for instance, that, you know, they're not playing ball, and then what they would concoct in terms of punishments or interventions, if that were the case, I don't know. I know that neither Van nor Natalie is really interested in finding that out.
Well, let me ask you, I'll ask all of you, the first question from a listener. Can the state put RCSD into receivership, and should it? Well, you're not going to answer should it, Justin, but can it put RCSD into receivership?
I'm not totally clear on all the regulations on that. I don't think it can. You know, that's sort of what the mayor a few years ago proposed, that she would sort of lop off the poor performing schools and create a little sub-district, and that's not really envisioned in the regulations. But that's not to say that the commissioner or the legislature or anybody else couldn't look and say, boy, we have a real situation here. We need to come up with something else.
Okay, Ben.
Let me just answer that. And I know this, having spoken to the commissioner, having examined the law myself, the answer to that is no. And I think Justin is correct. And I spoke to the mayor about it. What she wanted to do is create a receivership district, you know, certain areas within the district that for schools that were struggling. And what the commissioner told me at the time and what lawyers, education lawyers, much more experienced than myself, made it very clear that wasn't possible. That's not what the statute calls for. Now, the commissioner can do what she did, which was to appoint a distinguished educator to the entire district to make a series of recommendations. But there is no statutory language that okay. would allow her to appoint a receiver for the whole district. If I can just add, respond to something Natalie said, I don't take the position that, you know, we're only going to graduate children at a rate of 60%, 70%, 80%, 90%. She's absolutely right. Our kids have to be college ready. But here is the point. In 2007, when I took the oath of office at 50 school that I attended when I was a child, the four-year graduation rate was 39%. Now, I would imagine that those 39%, many of them probably weren't college ready either. My position is I don't disagree with Commissioner Shepherd or anybody else who says our kids should be college ready. But I'm saying to this community, it is a whole lot better to have kids getting their diplomas in a position to go on to good, productive college careers and professional lives than having kids who are only 39% of them are graduating. So, you know, I often use a phrase because a lot of people get it with some football season. We are moving the chains. That's you know, anybody who watches football knows what I'm talking about. We are not on our own 39-yard line anymore. And that's a good thing. Now, we're not in the red zone. We're not in field goal range. And we certainly haven't scored any touchdowns. But we are moving the chains. And while Commissioner Shepherd and many other people are right to complain that more of our kids should be college ready, we're getting there. I mean, if you look at what they're doing at East High School, the number of kids that have accumulated a number of credits at ninth grade and passed a number of regions. So we're getting that fast enough. But we're moving the chains.
To be fair here, because you've invoked East High School a number of times, and I understand why. I mean, anyone, first of all, anyone who's spent enough time with Dr. Nelms and the team there understands the level of challenge and the level of work, and so far the level of results that, at least that from what I've seen, are real. But eventually you got to translate that.
Absolutely.
And one of the criticisms from the outset was, or the questions from the outset was, if you're going to pour that much in terms of resources into East High, does it make sense? It's kind of the same question that we have about charter schools. Are the rules so different that you can't apply that? Are we going to learn any lessons from East that you can apply?
I absolutely positively believe we can, and we need to move faster. I know Commissioner Shepherd is one of those folks who supports what's going on over there. But listen, people say, well, you know, all the money we spend over there, well, that's what our kids need, damn it. I'm keeping it real with you. That's what our kids need. They need more social workers. They need more reading instructors. If people think we're going to get out of this challenge by simply saying we're going to make everything equal and we're going to reduce East High School to where it was, we're going to make everybody receive the same amount of service because that's all we can afford, you will continue to have people like Dr. Aquino come in and tell us things aren't successful. I'm not saying that money is the answer, but I'm saying if you find an answer that includes money, the effective prioritization of resources, which is what is going on at East High School and in other schools, I should mention, you gotta have the courage to say that's what is needed, because you gotta remember, this is the third poorest community in the nation, particularly child poverty. We need to have resources, properly allocated resources, and what you have at East High School is an example of what can happen. And again, people say, well, it's too much money. Well, how much money does it cost you to incarcerate a child right across the street at the jail? It's a lot of money. How much money does it cost to engage in preventative resources? It's a lot of money. Drug rehab, a lot of money. Prenatal care, a lot of money. I think what we invest in our children and what is working at East High School is a worthy investment.
Okay. Natalie Shepherd, you want to respond to that?
Yeah. So, you know, I want people to be very clear on how they look at the resources that we put into East. They're doing a lot of great things over there, but I want us to be cautious in regards to the fact that we're putting in money as a reactive nature. So they're coming in late and now we have to pour all these resources in to get them back on the track where they need to go. I want to see resources, even if it's the same amount, to go in for things that are preventative or proactive. So I'm a very big component on extracurricular activities and things for students in that regards. But I don't want us to misinterpret the fact that we are playing catch up when we're putting all this money in, as opposed to putting it in on the front end. I'm all for investing in that as well.
Okay. So that's fair. You want to add anything there, Justin?
Yeah, I think one of the important things to note about East and what you said about charters is on point, is that part of their success, I think they would attribute to the fact that they have gotten out from under the administration that Dr. Aquino describes. They essentially can make their own decisions. They have their own smaller administration. And that's kind of the nature, I think Dr. Aquino would say in this report, of progress in the district, is that there are certainly points to be grabbed in terms of the graduation rate. The test scores have been going up a little bit. The suspensions certainly have been going down. There's progress to be made, largely because the many, many employees of the district are every day doing extraordinary work. You know, maybe it's not always as well in unison as it ought to be, but people are working extremely hard to get kids across the line. The question is whether there is a natural ceiling to that. When, for instance, in the Rick Timms report, which examined the budget process for the district, he said it's evident that different departments and different levels of the hierarchy are not communicating with one another. So, for instance, in a certain budget line, they'll transfer in $1.5 million because they think they'll need it, but then it turns out they didn't, so they transfer out another $500,000 or $1 million. So when there's stuff like that happening, when there's a lack of communication in the system, I think it's reasonable to conclude that we can get the graduation rate up to, I don't know, 65%, 70% maybe, because people are doing a lot of great work and are trying very hard. We can get our test score rate, passage rates up a certain amount higher, but we can't, the district can't be the district it wants to be if it's fighting against the massive administration at central office.
But you know, I don't disagree with anything Justin said, but I want to go back to something that we discussed earlier on. What was Dr. Aquino's job? I have a letter here, dated November 14th, from the commissioner, and it's directed to me as board president. It says, Dr. Aquino was to conduct a thorough assessment of the district and its schools and submit for her approval a report. So I just want to go back to this point that we made earlier on. Again, he's not his job isn't to be a cheerleader for the district, but he was to conduct a thorough assessment. If that assessment, in my opinion, revealed that there's some good work that Justin just revealed, good work that I'm sure Commissioner Shepherd can reveal, that she's seen, if you want to call them pockets of excellence, I believe it was incumbent upon him to report that as well. The only reference to East High School was how much it cost. Not the phenomenal, and I think that's not an exaggerated term, the phenomenal advances in graduation rates, ELA scores, significant increases in ELA scores, attendance rates, reduction in suspensions. To not include that as part of your thorough assessment, again, I'm not looking for the guy to say, oh, you're all great, because you can't say that about this district. I concede that. But if there's good work being done, it should have been highlighted, because to that extent, he could have been saying, why aren't, like, for example, I would have loved for him to say, and Commissioner Shepherd will probably back me up on this, we submitted, this also to your point, we submitted a resolution a couple few months ago, maybe more than a couple few months ago, to expand what they're doing at East High School to number 33 school, to get at, in advance, the problems that Commissioner Shepherd says we're often getting at too late. And that's what they're doing. They're playing catch-up at East High School. We submitted that resolution to create a pipeline from 33 to East High School. It has been very challenging to get that doggone thing passed. Had he put in his report, you got some phenomenal things happening at East High School. The data proves it. But you know what? As Commissioner Shepherd says, you're playing catch-up. There's this resolution the board has presented to create a pipeline from elementary school to East High School. That's not happening. No reference to what is happening at East High School. No reference to the effort. My point is, this would not be an exercise in cheerleading. This would be an exercise in promoting and identifying best practices. And there's a lot of them in this district.
All right, I'm going to let Commissioner Shepherd respond to that in just a second. But I have to ask you, because you've invoked East and you've invoked Dr. Nelms, do you want him to be the next RCSD superintendent?
No, I mean, I want whoever the board and the community identifies. And we don't have any candidates yet. We just picked a search firm. So
should he be a candidate?
I think Dr. Nelms is I think his work speaks for itself. Evan, I'm not going to go that way. I'm going to let, if he's interested in applying, I'm sure he'll apply. If he's not, he won't. And we'll continue to have an excellent EPO superintendent at East High School.
Okay. Do you want him to apply? Have you asked him to apply?
He ought to have your job. Justin's never asked me that question.
Okay.
Because you see, I'm not going to answer it, right?
That's fair. I respect it, but I know you respect that I got to ask you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Commissioner Shepherd, should he apply?
Ooh.
You don't have to. I got to ask the question. This community has gone through a lot of superintendents, and in a moment,
yeah,
I'll ask Justin to kind of put a little context in that. Because one thing that I don't think we, as a community, do, we kind of get a little myopic and not realize, is this normal? I mean, how often do other districts go through superintendents like this? But it feels like a starting over. Not that it has to, but in some ways it does. So, do you want to respond to some of what President White said regarding East and whether it needs to be more of a model for the rest of the district?
Yeah, so as he said, they are doing phenomenal things over at East under the leadership of Dr. Nelms. And so just to answer your question, I would say, why not? Well, you know, why wouldn't he apply to come over and kind of share some of his expertise and skills with the entire district? So I do look forward to any applicant that's interested. But I do want to say that when we're talking about the report and what it was in highlighting and being thorough with an analysis, is that, you know, I think that our school social reform is going to come at the state level. And so even though I was against us spending money to have a distinguished educator come in, I did speak to the state commissioner Ilya, and I let her know, you know, these are things that we as a community, we as leaders, have been saying for years. And so why not? Now, when it comes through a report, is in my term, and this is not to say that they haven't been taking their job seriously, but then why now is it that, you know, the state, the regents, the mayor's office, everybody is now kind of playing a little bit of a hands-on approach when these are the same things that we have been advocating for in Albany for years and years and years. And so one thing that I can say coming out of this is that I appreciate the report. So now it gives us leverage to continue to move in the way that we need to move.
Okay, so maybe some weight behind it now. I want to ask our guests if they think there was one section from Dr. Jaime Aquino, who wrote this report, there was one section that Justin noted in his reporting for the Democrat and Chronicle that I wanted to highlight and ask you if it's fair. And I'll tell you that as a journalist, I sort of get on the fence about asking political leaders or those running for office if it's fair to ask them where you send your own kids. But Dr. Aquino noted this in the report, and what the part that Justin quoted in his reporting for the Democrat and Chronicle was, quote, the system's failure to deliver high-quality education to all its students has resulted in teachers, principals, central office administrators, and even some board commissioners and the mayor seeking alternative educational settings for their own children, end quote. Van, is it fair to ask you, your fellow commissioners, Mayor Warren, if you don't send your kids to RCSD schools, why you don't? Is that fair?
Well, I won't answer the question whether it's fair, but I will answer the question. That may tell you something. Very short answer. I have three children. Very blessed to have three wonderful children. My first two came from my first marriage, and they both went to public schools, right from number 12 school on up to Wilson High School, my two older children. I remarried. And this is an old story. People have heard this many times from me. I remarried to a beautiful woman. You probably know her. Many of you know her. Bridget, right? And we had a child, Ava, wonderful kid. Bridget always went to Catholic schools when she was a kid. St. Agnes, I think before that. Her K through 12, she was a Catholic school student. She wanted her child, her only child, to go to Catholic school. Now, marriage is a partnership. But sometimes some partners are heard more louder than others. And
you better be careful here.
And I heard her. And listen, let me just say, I have absolutely no regrets about my first two children going to city schools. I'm glad they did. I think they were successful students. They were college ready. They went to college, and they're good contributing citizens. And one of them is a teacher. And one of them works around school systems. I believe that happened because my two children went to the city schools. My older one, my youngest one, who is now in college now, Hampton University, historically black college, I'm equally proud of her and the choices that we made. So I think people need choices. My goal was when I got on the board and my kids were still in the district, my two older kids were still in the district, to make it a district where people could say, I want my children to go to the city school. My wife never got to that point, never would, because she was a Catholic school kid. But that's why I'm on this board.
Okay. Natalie, do you think that point that Dr. Aquino made in his report, and then four journalists who kind of consider talking about this, is that fair? Is it fair to ask commissioners where you're sending your kids?
You know, I think it's a fair question. You know, and I can speak for myself that I'm a product of Catholic schooling, pre-K through 12. My daughter is in a private school now as well. But I don't want people to get caught up on the fact of where leaders send their children, because every child deserves to have a good quality education. And I think that a leader's strength in that regard should be checked on the fact of their work and are they strong advocates in this area. And I can tell you right now, regardless on where my child and future children go to school, it wouldn't make me any stronger of an advocate, because I do feel that every child under my purview is my responsibility, as if they were my daughter. Like, my friends can tell you know, the tears that I shed when I can't get the things that I want to get done in the district, which is going to help our students become better. So I think it's a fair question. It's something that I don't hide from. It's I've gotten a lot of backlash from it, right from campaign up until now. And it's just something that I won't run from. And it's not anything that's going to deter me from being a strong advocate.
Okay. Justin, you think those are fair questions to ask?
I think it's fair. I don't have any way of getting into the conversations that happen inside Van's house or Natalie's house or lovely Warren's house in terms of what's best for their children. That's obviously a personal thing. I think Natalie's right that it can be overblown. But I will just observe, having covered school board elections in every district in Monroe County, that it doesn't come up in Penfield and Brighton and Pittsford and anywhere else. You can't know in any given case, is Natalie sending her kids somewhere else because she thinks RCSD is terrible, or is it just because she has whatever personal circumstances. But we have this conversation about politicians who live in Rochester, and we don't have it about politicians in general who live outside of Rochester, which says more about our community than it necessarily might about any individual person.
I'm going to go back to the emails in just a second. Listeners, we're talking about Dr. Aquino's report on the Rochester City School District and the process of moving forward, responding to the report, the process of bringing in the next superintendent. By the way, Justin, what is the context? I mean, this is a district that has gone through a number of superintendents, especially in the last decade. How does that generally look compared to other cities of similar size?
I don't think it's wildly different. It's true in general that city schools churn through superintendents, mm-hmm. and that has a lot of reasons behind it. I would just say briefly, I think that the important thing about that is not whether you get the right person. And I know Van has a whole 20-minute PowerPoint presentation that he'll go through in a second if we have time about this point. The important thing, you know, there's more than one way to skin a cat in terms of specific...
Nobody should be skinning cats, but...
Apologies. In terms of specific policies that you...
Dog lover.
Put in place. But, you know, what's important is that you pick something and stick to it. Mm-hmm. Dr. Aquino made the point in his report that there's not a uniform curriculum in the district. There's like 20, 30 different curriculums in place in all different schools. And honestly, probably most of them are fine if we all settled on one. The fact that we haven't is problematic. You know, any superintendent like Dr. Vargas came in and he was right to say that we need to focus on chronic absenteeism in early education. And he brought in a number of people who are more or less good educators and have the right things in place. But when people know that this deputy superintendent is going to be gone in 6 months, this policy is going to change in 6 months, the superintendent is going to be gone as soon as her contract is up or even sooner, that completely hamstrings whatever good intentions or good policies you might have in place.
Okay, and let's hit that curriculum point. It's 12:38. My goodness, we needed both hours for this. We'll get our only break, and then we're going to get your phone calls and emails, I promise. But on that point, you're right. Dr. Aquino in the report is talking about a lack of a uniform curriculum. Natalie Shepard, what can we do about that right now?
Well, I know right now the administration is working on putting together a committee of leaders in our district, educators, where they can review curriculum and we can adopt a uniform curriculum. So they are working on putting that committee together. And I know you want to pass that question over probably to Van White, but I do want to say, I just wanted to back up real quick and just talk about a point that Justin made in regards to in our community, our community at large asks about our leaders and where we send our kids to school, and does it happen in other communities? I know that over the decades, a lot of that has to do with the mistrust and the broken relationship between the community and the leaders that we have. And so I appreciate that people are able to bring that to the forefront, because that's one way for them to leverage, well, can I trust you? And so if our kids don't go to the same schools that we preside over, then that means that we have to do more to gain that trust from community members. So I just wanted to make sure that people understand it's a way for our community to say, listen, we're trying to rebuild, but you got to give me something to rebuild this trust on.
Okay. Van?
Yeah, it's not a 20-minute presentation, but maybe 20 seconds. Let's see if I can do it quick. The Brookings Institute, obviously a well-known research branch in the academia, has indicated that in examining suburban and urban districts, this is going to surprise people, and they're not going to want to believe it, but the research shows nationally that the length of a superintendent's tenure has no effect on outcomes. You could be there 6 years or 6 months. That's the research. People don't want to believe
you're that. You're correct.
Right?
I don't believe it.
Right,
but anyway.
Well, check it out. Check it out. Brookings
but
Institute.
But I do listen to evidence, so go ahead.
Okay. That's evidence. That's Brookings Institute. Secondly, the average life of in terms of Rochester's experience, if you look at the graduation rate, which Justin refers to, the chart is going in the right direction. We're averaging about 2.2% increases in graduation rates every year for the last 5-6 years. I remember when people would say, oh, we can't break 50. You remember that? We can't break 50%. We just barely break 50%. Now we're at 60 and nobody's saying, whoa, what happened, right? So, and then also, folks remember, we used to have a terrible, absolutely outrageous talk about pipelines, school to prison pipeline. We were suspending kids, kicking them out of school, and next place they were spending time was at the prison, right? You look at our out of school suspension rate has gone down, Justin will tell you this, has gone down dramatically. Now, why do I bring those two examples and why do I bring up the Brookings Institute? Our example is consistent with national research, which is we had at least two superintendents during the period where our graduation rate has steadily gone up and where our out of school suspensions have gone down. two superintendents. Justin is right. I know Natalie probably agrees with this. Most folks, the consistency, I believe, and I get a lot of flack for this, is the board and the community staying engaged, staying involved. So when Bohan left, the board continued to say, hey, we're going to continue to push attendance. Because if they're not in their seats, how can they learn? And when Barbara leaves, there are things that, for example, she's really pushed this conversation about equity. The Board of Education, my guess is, just thinking about my colleagues, will want to see that initiative continue. So the national data and our local experiences, you can make progress. And I'm not saying we wouldn't want a superintendent to stay here 6 years, 7 years. And by the way, look at the data. Our superintendents, if you add them all up, Manny Rivera, Clifford Janey, Barbara Dean Williams, Jean-Claude Brizard, we average about four. We're above the national stay.
Not in the last decade.
You should check that. Because,
really?
But, well, listen.
You're going all the way back to Rivera, Janey.
Well, all the way back. Before Rivera, right before Rivera, right after Rivera was Jean-Claude Brizard, right?
Yeah.
Right? So, but even Jean-Claude Brizard, he was here for 3.5 years.
Okay.
Bohan was here for about at least 4 years, right?
All right.
So that's above the national average.
But you want your next superintendent, you would prefer them to be there for a little while.
I would, but listen, I'm not embarrassed to say I believe the community has the answer. I tell people, stop waiting for Superman or Wonder Woman. The answer is in our community. Stop waiting for Superman.
You know, if you say waiting for Superman, it sort of invokes something in education.
It does.
It takes us down a whole other road that I would have to do.
I told you it would take 20 minutes.
It wasn't 20. Okay, maybe it was 10.
I'm going to get our only break, and if you're on the phone, we're going to take your phone calls after our only break of the hour. Van White, Natalie Shepard, Rochester City School Board Commissioners, Justin Murphy from the Democrat and Chronicle, talking about this report and the future of the district. Next. Coming up in our second hour, researchers have a plan to deal with the brown marmorated stink bug, the stink bug that you see just about everywhere these days. They want to release samurai wasps to control the population. What could go wrong? Well, we can laugh about it, but they have put a lot of work and thought into this. We're going to talk about pest control, controlling stink bugs, next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Arnold and Henrietta first on the phones. Go ahead, Arnold.
Yes, I wonder why is it all across New York State that you never see kids with school books to go home with and do homework?
We never see kids doing homework?
No, inner city kids.
In every city
across New York State. And it's been that way since I can remember. I'm 72 years old now.
Okay. Arnold is saying, and I'll ask the commissioners in the room, is it true that Rochester City School District kids don't have homework?
I'm not sure if that was his question. He's saying, why aren't they able to take textbooks home out of the schools when they're having homework?
Is that what you're saying, Arnold?
There is no homework to do.
Oh.
And they don't have any textbooks to refer to once they get home. So the teachers don't have to correct any papers. And I guess that's political.
Okay, so do you think they're not assigning homework in cities?
And if you ever find a kid that have a textbook with them leaving school, that's not going to happen.
So I hear two things. So one is the textbooks not being able to go home with students. And I know in Dr. Aquino's report, he did make a recommendation that we provide the resources so that every child in our district, specifically RCSD, is able to take a textbook home. And the other part that I hear is no homework. So I know that in other school districts that there has been research out there that says homework is not necessarily aiding to the academic success of the student. I know in Fairport, I don't think that they get homework in Fairport. At the elementary level.
I think at the highest level, it's...
Well, I'm not in every school district in New York State, but I know from a fact, and I've been in New York State ever since 1946, and no school that I know of, with my knowledge, ever sent inner city kids home with textbooks and required to do homework this way, the teachers don't have to do any correction of
Okay, so Arnold, thank you. So what Arnold is saying is kids are not given homework in city schools in this state. That means less work for the teachers and less accountability for the students.
Oh, okay, so let me just say
real
quick.
True or false?
Let me just say to Mr. Arnold, 271-6780. Yeah, that's my office number. Or if you work by email, van.white@thelegalbrief.com. If you know of a school where you can say, this is not happening, children are not getting homework, call me up, send me an email. You can also reach me at district offices at 262-8525.
I mean, I don't want to be flip here. It would be a scandal if that were true.
Well, it would.
Wouldn't it?
And let me just add, from personal reflection, when my kids, K through 12, number 12 school all the way up to Wilson, always had homework. Always had homework. Much of it I did not understand, but my children had homework. But let me also say, more recently, I have a child, I have a relative who has taught in the district for many years. He always gave homework. I know other people, teachers who I happen to know, give homework. So, but that's not to discount what Arnold has said. Maybe he knows of a situation. He does. Give
okay.
me a call.
Okay. Same, Commissioner Shepherd.
So my issue is not whether homework is being assigned, is what's the purpose of homework. Like, not just assigning homework to assign it, but yeah, I mean, growing up traditionally, we always got homework. But like I said, there's research out there that says that kids should be spending time with their families when they go home. And so I believe it is Fairport Central High School or Central School District that does not give homework to elementary kids. So
all right, and Justin,
I need to look that up, though.
Justin, do you know of schools that in Rochester that aren't doing homework at all?
I'm not aware of that. I was just at the library the other day, and there was a group of kids from City School District having a grand old time on a project. So I believe that they're doing their work, and the teachers are doing their correcting.
All right. So let's go ahead and let's continue with your phone calls. Robert in Fairport. Go ahead, Robert.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for taking my call. I read the report, and it kind of insinuates that the board itself is the problem. If you look at page 9 of the report, it says observers noted that in some instances – board commissioners act as if they were the superintendent trying to manage the day-to-day operations of the district. And it goes on to say that day-to-day operations should be left to the superintendent. This sort of sets the whole thing up for failure because you got a case where the board education is trying to make decisions that the superintendent should be making. So there's some micromanagement going on. I kind of like to hear from the president of the board exactly what's going on here with these the interference in day-to-day operations from the board.
Robert, thank you. Let's have both the commissioners there. By the way, I think Robert Justin Murphy summed it up decently well, that Dr. Aquino's report indicated that there's this idea that the board is a little heavy-handed.
Yeah, I think that's true.
Okay, President White.
Yeah, let me just say there's a total of 84 recommendations. 14 of them relate to what is called governance, and not all of them relate to the board, but so there's 84 recommendations, and 14 of them relate to what the board does or what it does not do. And I think reasonable minds can disagree. Perhaps this caller won't like what I'm about to say. Justin is not going to be surprised what I'm about to say, and probably you won't either. I'm a lawyer by trade, and I take my charge not from Dr. Aquino or anybody else. I take my responsibility from New York State law in Section 2503, I believe it is. Or you can just type in New York State Education Law, Role and Responsibilities of Board of Education. The word policymaker never appears. People want to accuse Natalie, Commissioner Shepherd, and other commissioners of micromanaging. You got a struggling district. Again, let me remind you, when I got on, it was 39%. When Commissioner Shepherd got on, it wasn't a whole lot or nothing to be proud of, right? You can say whatever you want to me about what you think the role of a board is, but listen, when we were very passive and hands-off-ish, we had a 39% graduation rate. We're now at 60. And I think what that says is there's a role for everybody. And again, I would encourage this caller to look at the law. Don't watch some advocacy group.
To be clear, then, you disagree with the report in this regard.
I do. And where I get my point of reference is from, not my personal feelings, but the law. And I said to Dr. Aquino at a meeting, when I referenced this particular part of the report, I said, we respectfully disagree, but I want you to know I take my charge not from the recommendation, but the law. The law never uses the word policymaker, and in fact, it uses the word manages, oversees, at least six times talking about the Board of Education, uses the word manages. Now, we don't do that. I'm not interested. I don't know what curriculum is being offered at number 19 school or number 23 school. We leave that to the responsibility of people who are educating those arenas. But I want folks to know, at least with respect to me, and I suspect with other board members, given where we're at, do not expect us to do what the commissioner won't do, to do what Dr. Keenan won't do, to watch the system fail. We won't do that. And that's why we're at 60%, because a community of people said this is our collective responsibility.
I got you. Okay. Commissioner Shepherd.
Yeah, so when I hear words like interfere or micromanaging, and I was trying to stay away from the word dysfunction, but when I hear those things attributed to the board, it really frustrates me because I feel like those words are so negative, and they create chaos on one instance, or they create fear on the other, where, okay, well, we don't want to be labeled as that, so maybe we should be hands-off and just allow things to happen, and whatever happens, oh, well, we'll deal with it then. And I've been saying this from day one, is that the board is not the issue in regards to what is happening specifically in the day-to-day operations. I think that we do have a duty that if we see something wrong, that we check it. And I know a lot of people will say, well, you're supposed to check the superintendent, so all of your things should go through there. But if you have a system as big as ours, if you have it operating in a way that does not promote academic success for our kids, and it's been doing this for so long, how can we put it all, as President White says, how can we put it all onto one superman or superwoman? Like, I feel like we should be a team, and by state law, again, the superintendent is a part of the board. And so if we're looking at it as interfering or micromanaging, of course, that is negative. But I don't see my role as being in the weeds, as people call it. I don't see that as being a negative thing because we're trying to move this district forward.
All right, we've got to take as many calls as we can, and I'm going to ask you to keep it very tight because we've got a lot to get through. Eamon next on the phone. Go ahead, Eamon.
Hi, yeah, thanks for taking my call. So really quickly, I just wanted to respond to the comment about the report, because I've read that report, the Brookings Institute, and I think that I understand what Van's saying, because that is what the report says, but I think what's really there is it's speaking to the fact that it's very hard to distinguish what the effect a superintendent does have. And if you were to look into that study, what they do is they control for a lot of different things, you know, the teacher, the student demographics, the grades. And there's not a lot of variation left over to really see what is the superintendent effect. And also, it's not a scientific study. It's a descriptive. They're just looking at what happened. They're not setting it up in a way where you can definitively prove causation. So we have to be a little bit careful with that. My question is, what will you do to improve the relationship between the board and the superintendent? Because it is important that the district works together to set some clear priorities, and having a good working relationship is important. So what will you do with the next superintendent that will be different from these last two?
Eamon, thank you. Got to keep it tight. Go ahead, President White.
Yeah, I think it's all about relationships. And because Evan said keep it tight, I probably can't get into all the detail, but I think it's the short answer is it's about being respectful, but also forceful about your opinion. But when you hear that opinion, don't respond negatively to it. In other words, I think sometimes what happens is you got seven experienced, strong-willed people who are there because they see what everybody else sees, a failing district. Nobody on the Board of Education got on there with a silver spoon with a 90% graduation rate. We all started when it was in a bad place. I think, though, what is key is when you're frustrated and you're struggling to maintain a level of professionalism and respectability that allows the dialogue to continue. I wish I could spend more time answering the question because it's very common. It's all about
relationships. Are you going to do anything different?
What will be different is we will see what happened here is the superintendent that is serving Barbara Dean Williams is actually serving a different board that picked her. It's all about relationships. And so here's the good news. We will, this new board will pick a superintendent which we all or most of us will agree to, and that will be the foundation of that working relationship. The test will come if next year, Justin knows this, Natalie knows this, although she's not up for re-election, there are a number of slots, I think four slots. I'll be honest with this caller. The challenge is that next year you conceivably could have four new board members, a superintendent that was just picked, and then you have the challenge of formalizing and solidifying those relationships. Here's what I'll say to that caller. When that happens, we will be ready to have retreats, which we started to have now, that will allow the new members and the new superintendent to develop that relationship. It's all about relationships.
So for me, you know, I would say that relationship is definitely important, but what I want to have happen next is that we choose the right superintendent, because above relationships is the work is the most important. And so we have to have a superintendent that comes in that understands the scope of work that they are going to have to do to get the job done. And for me, that trumps out any relationship that you will have, because then naturally relationships will form around the common goals and achievements. And I do want the next superintendent to come in and understand that there is a disconnect between expectations and execution. So accountability is going to be very major for me. And that, again, is work. That has nothing to do with relationships. It's all about work.
We couldn't even get through all the calls and emails. Bob had written an email to ask Justin Murphy, who is, Bob says, in the midst of finalizing his book. Ask him, what would Frederick Douglass say and do about this? What did he say and do about segregation, given its personal impact on his children?
Well, that's a good question for the next 25 seconds that we have before the end of the show.
Not even that. So how about the next time you come on, we'll talk about it.
Yeah.
How's your book coming?
It's coming along.
When's it coming out?
Don't ask me that.
Okay. I'm not your publisher. I'm not your editor. And thank God. But I think Bob's question's a good one. So let's hit it the next time we're here.
Sounds good.
And if we didn't get to your phone calls, these are conversations with the board, with community leaders. To have going forward as we continue to digest not only the Aquino report, the quest to hire a new superintendent, and more. I want to thank Natalie Shepard. Commissioner Shepard, thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Van White, president of the Rochester City School Board, thank you for being here. As always, Justin Murphy, we'll see your work in the Democrat and Chronicle. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Short break. More connections coming up.